Fox, right? Well, or that was the Fox hole.
That was the Fox hole.
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
All right, it's Tuesday night, time for Amateur Radio Roundtable. I'm Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and we got some interesting things to talk about tonight. Hey, if you're out there listening on shortwave on WBCQ on 5130 kilohertz, drop us an email. Let us know where you are and how you're hearing us on shortwave. And also, if you have internet access, you just ran across us by accident, you can go to W5KUB.com, W5KUB.com, and you can watch the show and you can see us and you can actually join a chat room there and talk to us through the chat room. And we may get some. We're going to open the phone lines up tonight for our viewers to call in. It's kind of the second half of the show is going to be open mic night. So we're going to take calls and talk about anything ham radio related. We have phone numbers in 65 countries. If you'd like to dial in from Australia or wherever, we have local numbers for you. So give us a call. Join our Facebook group. We've got about 8,000 plus hams in our Facebook group that follows the show. That Facebook group is just called W5KUB. Just do a search and you'll find it there. And we'd love to have you join it. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, just a quick announcement. I know a lot of people have sent me a QSL card and are wanting a QSL card from me. I'm having new cards made. It's going to be about 3 weeks before they come in, but I'm having some new cards made. This is kind of what they're going to look like, something like this. So you'll be getting one of those in about 3 or 4 weeks. So don't give up on me there, and we'll get your card out. Those are coming from our friend Genady. He's over in the Ukraine, and he has donated a lot of cards for prizes on our webcast before. I don't think there's anywhere you can get better quality cards. You can get 1,000 full color cards front and back for about $70-something, and that's unheard of. That includes shipping back from the Ukraine. So anyway, that's the story on the QSL cards. Let's jump over to our remotes and see how things are going out there with Katie and Rich. Hey guys, how you doing? Katie, tell me what's going on over in your land first. You got any snow or anything out there?
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. Believe it or not, we are not getting the snow up here in northeastern Wyoming like everyone down south. Southern part of Wyoming, western part of Wyoming, Colorado, they're all getting nailed with snow, a couple feet, I think, in some places. And today we've just gotten a few little spatters of snow, so nothing too major. That storm system was really kind of way south of us and heading over towards Joe in Nebraska. So it's been pretty quiet around here, cool, and just been getting some. Dwayne just got some QSL cards done from the sweepstakes this month, and of course getting ready for Thanksgiving this week. Looking forward to having a wonderful meal with my family, and I hope everybody out there is. We'll have the opportunity to do so, and looking forward to seeing what we have to talk about tonight.
All right. Well, I want to just say, I think out of all the holidays, Thanksgiving has always been my favorite holiday. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you can't go wrong. Especially the yummy food.
Yeah, and I eat that food for like days and days, boy. Mm. Oh, but I tell you what, I'm going to wish you a white Thanksgiving. I hope you have a white Thanksgiving out there. We're getting rain right now.
I don't think we're going to get a white Thanksgiving. Yeah, but somebody else might.
Probably not. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And we had a beautiful day here today. It was 60 degrees, and I was working on my front porch all day. So it's a nice little warm-up for November.
That is pretty good weather for you guys up there.
Yep.
I'm kind of glad I live down here. I don't like the cold, but we get a lot of heat down here too. You know, I'm kind of getting where I'd like to be in between, you know. I don't like heat and I don't like cold. How about you?
We get a little bit of each.
yeah, man.
If you're in a little bit of heat, that means you're in trouble with Kathy.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. Well, hey, it's going to be what it's going to be, you know. I think my son, Chris, is tuned in. He's driving back for Thanksgiving. He's going to be here this weekend and from Austin, Texas. And it's such a long drive for him. He's stopping in Shreveport to spend the night tonight, halfway back or something. Anyway, he's listening to our audio portion of this.
Hi, Chris. Drive safe.
All right. All right. Well, let's, Katie, why don't you guys, you and Rich, talk about CQ and tell us all about it.
All right, that sounds good. Well, it's the end of the month, and that, of course, means it's time for Rich Moses and W2VU to join us from CQ Magazine and tell us what's coming up in the next issue. So welcome this evening. Rich, how are you?
Thank you. Doing great. And first, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and I hope that many of your viewers and listeners had a chance to get on the air this past weekend in the CQ Worldwide CW contest and make a lot of contacts. I had a few contacts. I had a limited amount of time available, but still fun getting in there. And always a lot of fun in the contest.
Oh, yeah. So, I saw lots of people all over social media that were posting from operating from around the world. It's always fun with a CQ Worldwide contest because you just see such an outpouring of activity from everywhere and a lot of teams. So a lot of group photos of clubs activating from different countries, and it looks like a lot of fun and a lot of contacts were had. So it'll be fun to see how all the scores come out when it's all done.
Definitely. So our issue coming up is our technology special for the year. And we've got, as usual, a whole bunch of different things across the spectrum of technology. We've got 9 different articles on different aspects of technology. Our lead story is called AI Meets AR, about the convergence of artificial intelligence and amateur radio, and how they will help complement each other. And we've got a great illustration here. I don't know if you can see it very well, by the author. Which way am I going here? There we go.
Give it a quick, set it for a second. It should, you know what? I think because of your background setting, it's not quite pulling it up.
That person, that article looks like it was written in the witness protection deal there for us.
It's a drawing of a robot sitting in front of a ham station, so it's very
cool. There you go.
Next one is antenna article on resurrecting a Hi-Z4 receive array. It's a low band antenna for 160 and 80 meters. And our author is from Finland, and he got this from a friend who had had it in the air for many years, and it had had a few too many Finnish winters and needed a little bit of work, which he did, repaired everything, and then did some optimization on it and put it up and at his house, and it's working better than ever, and definitely better than whatever he had there before. We've got a review of the Ziegu G1M HF transceiver. That's a Chinese radio, and MFJ is the U.S. distributor for Ziegu, and I'm not sure whether they're just yet carrying the model, but they provided us with one to review. And basically, you know, it's the author who's our QRP editor subtitled it "A Big Surprise in a Little Box." So he's pretty pleased with it. He said, after overcoming some initial challenges, we found that this low-cost portable QRP receiver has a transceiver has a lot going for it. So it's an interesting review and interesting radio. Our next CQ Classic piece is also on technology. This is if you're not haven't been listening the last few months, each issue up leading up to our 75th anniversary issue in January is we've been reprinting a classic article from past issues, and this month's is the first FM column in CQ, which was the first FM column in any magazine. This was from January 1971, and it's takes us back in time quite a ways. And that's followed by a history piece by W0RW on W6AQY, a very early VHF FM mountaintop repeater in Southern California that he was responsible for, and it's now living in Colorado. we've got a project article on building a multi-purpose switch debouncer. And if you don't know what a debouncer is, you have to read the article.
Yes,
yeah.
I was going to say, what is it? Well, I guess I'll have to wait.
Well, I know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, it's an electronic switch cleaner from what I can figure out. our investigative electronics detective Sherlock is back once again with an article on electrostatic discharge protection and whether it's still needed. The answer, not surprisingly, is yes. our microcontrollers and amateur radio column is on this month, three projects to control the microcontrollers in your radio. So it's and then going from digital to analog, we have KL7AJ's Analog Adventures column with your first oscillator. Even if it's not your first oscillator, it could be someone else's. But very, very good stuff on what makes oscillators oscillate. And finally, our antennas column this month is about polarization with a dose of fractals. So that's all mixed together there. And that's just the technology special part of the magazine. That's we got a whole bunch of other great stuff as well. We've got the 50th anniversary of the first special event call issued by the FCC to WX3MAS in Pennsylvania, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, for Christmas operation. Started in 1969, and they've been operating every year since. So that's a really, really cool story. They had this was before the FCC was regularly issuing special event call signs, so it's
really,
yeah,
and it's still in existence then.
Yes, it's the Delaware Lehigh Amateur Radio Club runs the station, and they're still on the air every Christmas from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. We've got a de-expedition story about the CY9C, de-expedition to the graveyard of the Gulf. The Gulf in this case being the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and it's St. Paul Island is where CY9 is. So interesting story there. Our emergency communications column this month is has a lot of detail on the situation out in California with the emergency communication repeaters that's been subject of a lot of controversy. And Walt W4ALT digs into that and comes up with a lot of good information. And it's still kind of up in the air as to exactly what's going to end up happening there. But at least to have some good background here. Joe K0NEB, of course, has his kit building column. And congratulations to Joe on the 10th anniversary of his column in the November issue. And
hey,
he is wrapping up the Nuvo 75 and throwing the switch. Will it work? We'll find out. we've got a report in our homing in column from K0OV on the Amateur Radio Direction Finding Championships in North Carolina. And that was held in the fall, I think. Learning Curve editor Ron Oshu, KO0Z, describes his own learning curve in learning about DMR OpenSpot. And that's an area that I still need to learn more about, is DMR and all the language that goes with it. And he explains quite a bit of it here. So it's, if you're interested in digital mobile radio, which is what DMR stands for, I learned that much, then this is a good article to give you some basics with. Tony Emanuel, K8ZR, VHF columnist this month, talks less about on-air activities and more about the ITU and the World Radio Communications Conference that just wrapped up at the end of last week. Obviously, he wrote this when it was just getting started, so but he's explaining how the ITU works and what these conferences are about. And I should note, in the VHF world in particular, that we have come away from that conference with a harmonized worldwide allocation for 6 meters. So we should soon be seeing a lot more European countries letting their hams operate on 6 meters. And they also approved a new set of rules for non-geostationary satellites. Their focus is on mega constellations of small satellites, which will talk to each other. And the plan is to be able to provide constant worldwide internet connectivity via these satellites. And I was able to attend their news conference virtually at the end of the conference and asked whether that would have any impact on amateur satellites, since all but one of our satellites are non-geostationary. And they assured me that no, there would not be any impact on amateur satellites. It's only deals with commercial satellites. So we got some good results out of the World Radio Communication Conference. And finally, for this issue, DX editor Bob Schenk, N200, hands his keyboard over to W8GEX Joe Pater to discuss DXing on 60 meters, which is a whole kind of different animal because it's channelized and it's not a worldwide assignment. So there's a lot of things to know about working DX on 60 meters, and we tell you all about them. So that's the basics of what we've got highlight-wise this month in CQ.
Holy and cow, that sounds like a humongous issue.
Yeah. It's chock full of great stuff. And, of course, in the January issue is our 75th anniversary issue. And
that's
I've
exciting.
Just finished my first draft of our of a history article on 75 years of ham radio and CQ, and it's currently at about 6,000 words and 24 pictures, so I may have to trim it back a little bit.
Just a little, maybe.
So, we'll see. I don't have a lot of time.
Either that or make it its own little extra piece.
Yeah, so, we'll see how that works out.
Oh, that sounds great, Rich. So, it's almost the end of the year, but obviously anybody can subscribe to CQ at any time of the year they want to, and they'll get in with the next issue. So if someone's interested, are there any specials going on right now? Like, if you sign up, you get a calendar or any of those good things?
We have a special going on that if you sign up, you get a calendar. I think it's the free calendar may be for a 3-year subscription. But I think we discount the calendar prices for shorter terms, for 1 or 2 year subscriptions. And we've got 2 calendars this year. We have our regular amateur radio calendar. And for our 75th anniversary, we have a commemorative calendar that covers the past 75 years of amateur radio and CQ in a calendar form. We've got 15 years per month. It works out real well.
That would make a nice gift.
5 years, 5 years per month because it's a 15-month calendar. And, so that worked out real well.
That sounds like it would make a great gift for, if you have someone in, you know, say maybe your ham club does gift exchanges, or, you know, you just have a friend that's a ham, if, you know, obviously, or if you want one for your own shack, but that sounds like it'd be a really nice gift too.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
So,
definitely.
So where do people go shopping to get their copies?
They can go to www.cq-amateur-radio.com and just click on the store.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Rich. It's always a pleasure to have you join us, and we sure do appreciate all the support that CQ Magazine provides us here at Amateur Radio Roundtable, and hope everyone who is listening is able to subscribe, whether you get a digital copy or the physical copy, and read this wonderful magazine. It's really, I've enjoyed it for a long time, and I hope you guys can too.
Well, yeah, thank you. I always enjoy being here, and again, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes,
happy
great, great magazine. I get it every month, and look forward to it each month. And let me ask people in the chat room: how many people in a chat room have seen the Amateur Radio Roundtable advertisement in CQ Magazine? It's been in there every month for, I don't know, a couple years, I guess.
I think so.
We got a nice ad in there. So I just wonder how many people in the chat room have seen that. And if you hadn't, go get your CQ right now and look in the index in the back for Amateur Radio Roundtable and take a look at our ad there. And I want to thank Rich here, too. Great magazine.
Oh, great. Well, seen a bunch of people in there saying they've seen it.
So oh, okay. Good. Good.
Yay.
Very good.
Okay. Advertising works. Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, very good. All right. Well, thank you, Rich. We'll see you. We'll see you. Let's see. Boy, next time we see you, it's going to be right before Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll see you later. Thanks for coming in tonight.
All righty. Good night.
Thanks, Rich. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. All right. Well, that was probably pretty cool there. I always enjoy listening to and seeing what's coming up in CQ Magazine.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be a good issue. I was telling Rich just before the show, I realize I've fallen a little behind on my reading, so I got to get caught up before the new issue arrives, especially with that one. Sounds like there's a lot of good...
Yeah.
There's always so many good topics, and for me, I decided to stick with the digital version because it's just a little less, less stuff. I already have so many things, you know, magazines and books and what have you, so I like to have the digital, because then I can just pop back, too, if, you know, sometimes you're talking with somebody on a... you know, on Facebook or at a ham fest or something, and someone will bring up an old topic or an article, and it's really handy to be able to just go back and take a look at stuff. And, you know, we all like to hoard our old magazines because there's always something that's good to, that's still good and useful, especially, you know, technical articles. And I like a lot of the stories where, you know, hearing about somebody going off on a de-expedition or projects they've done. It's, you know, the personalization of ham radio, that kind of stuff, I find the most interesting. And it's a readable magazine for me. I like it. I'm not super technical, and I've never been afraid of saying that. And so for me, I really enjoy it because I can understand it and get it. And there's such a wide variety of topics available. So,
well, you know, I save all my magazines. I've got many years stacked up. And, you know, when you get interested in wanting to get more involved and start building stuff, you'll go back through the old magazines and just start picking them up and fanning through them. Sure. And you'll see a little project in here and say, hey, that looks pretty neat. You know, I think I'll build it this week.
Speaking of back
exactly.
issues, just if you don't happen to have that collection, through hamcall.net, all of our back issues going back to the first one in 1945 are online at hamcall.net and available, accessible at very, very, very reasonable cost. It's per day or month. Very, very reasonable. Just go to hamcall.net/CQ and you can do a search on whatever topic you want and look at the first 10 pages of every issue without having to sign up for anything. So you can get the table of contents for each issue and see what's there, and then decide what you want to get, if you want to get anything at all. So it's a great resource. I've been making huge use of it over the last few weeks in doing the 75th anniversary stuff, looking back at old articles Tremendous resource.
That would surely give me more room here. I have quite a big stack of stuff, man. If I just did it. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Rich.
All righty. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right. All right. So let's see. What time is it? We're at 8:27. Hey, guys, we'll be right back with you here. Just a minute here.
Okay.
Step up your gift-giving game this year and get your favorite ham an ICOM transceiver. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. Make the most out of this holiday season with one of these ICOMs today. Give your favorite ham the SDR they really want, the IC7610. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. It is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of an SDR transceiver. It has RF direct sampling, an independent dual receiver, and dual digit select. Ham for the holidays, ICOM is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. The IC7300 is a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design, and it will far exceed your expectations. It has RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color screen, a real-time spectrum scope, and an SD memory card slot. The IC9700 is at the top of every ham's wish list this holiday season. Keep your competitive contesting edge with faster processors, higher input gain, higher display resolution, and a cleaner signal. ICOM's IC9700 is the pinnacle of perfection. It has a 4.3 color touchscreen, dual watch operation and full duplex operation in satellite mode, real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, and a voice recording playback function. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need, from QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote. An LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at ldgelectronics.com.
All right, and we're back. There's Katie. Where am I? I can't find me. I can't find me. Oh, wait. Wrong mouse. Wrong mouse. Wrong mouse. Here's what I'm dealing with, guys, right here. I'm dealing with 1, 2, 3, 4 mouses, or mice, and 1, 2, 3, 4 PCs running, and, you know, so sometimes I can't find this, but I'm right there. There we go. All right. Hey, guys, tonight we're going to do an open mic tonight. We're going to open the phone lines up because you guys always have interesting things to talk about. But I'm going to kind of go quickly through some of the things I've been kind of experimenting with and working with the last couple weeks. You guys know that, Martin told me, we built this 3/8 wavelength vertical antenna, and it's just amazing how it works. It's got about a 23-degree takeoff angle, and it's just a really good antenna. But Martin's convinced me to try halfway vertical. So I thought, okay, I'll take the challenge. So I put up a halfway vertical. Now, you got to have a pretty tall support to hang at. It's 67 feet tall, but I managed to get it hung out here in the yard. So I started experimenting with a halfway vertical. Now, the problem with halfway verticals is kind of severe because you're loading it at the very end, and it's a very, very high impedance. And let me go through a couple of pictures here. I've got some stuff for you. Let's see. Of course, we built the simple match for the 3/8 wave. It's just a simple toroid, a bifiller winding, and a capacitor. That thing works beautifully, man. SWR is just flat one-to-one, just about the entire 40-meter band. So, but tonight I want to talk about how we can match a halfway vertical. And a halfway vertical is about 65 or 66 feet tall. And I've been playing around with three different ways to do it. One is with ladder line. If you do it with ladder line and make the match out of that, it's going to be a single band only. Another way to do it is an LC network, which uses a capacitor and a coil. That's again going to be single band only. But the nice thing about that is we can run high power. We can run 1,000, we can run 1,500 watts with it. The third thing we're going to talk about tonight, and we're going to get into detail with it, is the 49-to-1 UN-UN and how it will match the high impedance of a halfway vertical. Now, a halfway vertical is, the impedance is quite high. People say it's somewhere around 2,500 to 3,200. I've been reading a lot of articles where people are saying it's as high as 4,500 ohms. So you need at least a 49-to-1 match in there. So we're going to do, we did all three. Let me start with this one. Let's see. I don't want to do that right now. This is basically a J-pole or a ZEP antenna. You know, the ZEP that was behind a Zeppelin? This is all this 40-meter antenna is. And if you really look at it, this 40-meter antenna basically is a J-pole. And if you're familiar with J-poles, you can see how it kind of makes the turn there, and you can see the two little dots where you attach your coax for the feed point. That's all it is. And the thing is, you can do it a couple different ways. The top left there is a 40-meter vertical using a matching line. The problem here is the 40-meter vertical is about 65 feet, and the matching line is about 33 feet. So this whole thing is about 100 feet tall. So that doesn't work out real well for most people. If you look at the top right, that's what I did. You can run the matching straight up and down, side to side. So you can see all the different configurations. So the matching doesn't make any difference on you know, how to orientate the matching on this this antenna. Here's another picture. Basically, it's a little bit clearer of what I did first with the ladder line. And the ladder line here, you can see that they've got it insulated from the ground. They've got a quarter wave piece of ladder line there. You can see the coax is tapped into window line, whatever you call it, and that's where you get your match. Now, that's what I did. That's what I did on my first attempt. This is what happened right here. So this is what happened. So I went out, you know, this is what it's supposed to look like right here. Everybody knows what this is. That's what it's supposed to look like. And that's what it ended up with. So, and I didn't know this was happening. So I came in a house. Oh, by the way, the match was just perfect out there with the SWR meter. So I came in a house and put the amplifier on it. And I think, okay, let's see if the amp blows up, or let's see if everything holds up. So, I tuned up, a few hundred watts, maybe 500, maybe 1,000. And, maybe a couple 10-second tune-ups or key down into this antenna to see how it would react. And it looked great. You know, everything looked good inside. The SWR was perfect. The amp wasn't acting up. Everything looked good. So I stopped, and then about 5 minutes later, I went outside to the antenna farm, and this thing was on fire back there. It was kind of dripping. It was dripping balls of fire down to, and my yard was completely covered in leaves from fall. So. I don't know why the leaves didn't catch on fire and it burned the entire neighborhood down, but that's what it looked like. So I'm thinking, okay, there's a very, very high voltage at the feed point where this ladder line matches the antenna. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I got to have something a little bit stronger, something a little bit better. I went with 6-inch. Some 6-inch line. Let's see what we got. Oh, here's a little diagram. If you look at this, you can see the matching point where it meets the antenna. You can see the voltage is minimum at the matching point there. Let's see, the voltage is maximum at the matching point there. Current's minimum. And, of course, the voltage is high on the ends. And so that's what gets you right there. So anyway, so that's kind of what we kind of ended up with. Somebody said that looked like a mouse over there when I saw it the first time. The picture's actually upside down, so it does look like a mouse. Kind of
a
dead
like
mouse.
It looks like a burnt flag.
Yeah, it looks like a dead mouser, doesn't it? So the next thing I do, okay, I'm thinking, okay, this 450-ohm stuff, you know, I need a little something, you know, with a dielectric, maybe a little bit more spacing. So I said, okay, well, let's just build some open line, ladder line. This would be 600-ohm ladder line. So I got some neat little half-inch PVC pipe from Lowe's, very, very inexpensive, a buck for 10 feet or something like that. Cut it all up right there, maybe a bunch of spacers. I think I made a spacer 7 inches long. And let's see what we got here. I'm drilling holes in it. Here's a little hint about drilling holes in
there. So by having a nail in the bore here, it makes it really
easy to get the holes lined up.
Get these lined up. So we just put that over there like that. And a hole.
So basically what that will do is it will allow you to get the hole straight, you know, where you don't have one way and one the other direction. So out in the shop, you can see here the ladder line starting to come together. That's 6-inch ladder line. The formula and the computer model, when you model that out, that comes out to be about 625 ohms, which is not a big deal. Yeah, I was shooting for a 600 ohm ladder line, but... So it worked out okay. Now, those insulators would slide on that wire, and you don't want all those insulators to all slide together, you know, or when you move this thing around, you want it to kind of stay in that position. So I filled a hole in the PVC pipe there with, I had a caulk gun, and I squirted silicone down in here, you know, to harden and to just hold that in place. Well, for some reason, it didn't stick. So I don't know what happened here. Okay, so I said, okay, that's not going to work. So I cleaned that out. I think, okay, liquid nail. I'm going to put some liquid nail in there. This would do it, man. So I put liquid nail in there, and it hardened. But guess what? The wire would still slide in and out of the hole. So I'm thinking, okay. Now, this wire, I bought a roll of it at Lowe's. It's a gas and oil resistant cover on the insulation, so not much is sticking to it. So I finally came up with a little bit different way to do it. If you just take you some needle-nose pliers and stick them in there, and you just give it a twist, that'll lock the place. It'll lock it in right there, and those things will not move at all right there. So you take your ladder line, and this is what we're going to use for match number two. You know, match number one was the 450 line. Match number two is the ladder line we built, which I know would handle the power. And again, you find the point on the ladder line where the match is best, your 50 ohm match, and that's coax soldered to the ladder line. So that's how we match it. I didn't like it though, because the matching is like 34 feet long. And look at there, I had to wrap it around the back flower bed, and I just didn't like the looks of that. It tuned up fine. It looked like it was going to work fine, and that would have been okay, and that would be a cheap way to do it. You can see how it just goes around right there. So the next thing we're going to do, you got to buy you a gallon of M&Ms. All right. So
sounds good to me.
Yeah, you've got to buy you a gallon plastic container of M&Ms and eat them all. And then once you do that, then you can get started on a different type set here. And this set now, we went with like open line, ladder line. Now we're going to try a different way to match it. And it's very easy to match it. It's very easy to match it with, let's see, there's some commercial products out here. Let me show you this right here. Basically, it's really simple. There's one right there. It's a single coil and a capacitor, and that's it. Two parts to match this antenna. Two parts, and that's all it is. So I started experimenting around with that, and there's a take right there. There's my coil. There's the capacitor in there. I used a fixed capacitor with the coil. Let's see. Yeah, put the coax connector on the end. And there it is, all waterproof and everything. You screw the end on it, and you can put it outside in the rain, and you're okay. So let's see what's next here. Okay, we have successfully built our M&M's antenna matching system. You can see on the end, we have the coax from the shack. On top, this is where we will connect our antenna, right here, our halfway vertical. We've got our inductor, our high voltage 50 picofarad cap in there, and I've added this series tuning capacitor to tune out some reactants. So, I'm going to take it out in a minute and hook it up, and we're going to see how it does. That's what it looks like. So what we did in the in that container there, we put a fixed capacitor in with the inductor because we knew the fixed capacitor was supposed to be 50 picofarad. And the inductor was going to be about 9.5 microhenry. That other capacitor you saw in here was actually in series with the antenna. The experiment was to tune out any reactants that might be in there, and it was somewhat effective there. So the next thing I tried with the LC circuit would be just a coil, and instead of a fixed capacitor, on the right side there, you have a variable which replaced the 50 picofarad fixed and allowed you to tune it, like 30, 40, 50, 60 picofarad and find the exact spot where it is resonant. And then what we would do, of course, would replace it because the spacing on that might not handle a kilowatt very easily. It looks like it's about 3/8 spacing. So we would replace it with a doorknob capacitor, which was rated for high voltage. The other capacitor, again, is in series with the antenna to try to tune out any reactant. So that's one attempt. We made probably 100 trips outside each time to adjust this, and we'd come in the shack. Basically, I showed you this commercial deal here. It's just a coil and a capacitor. That's all this is. It's the coil and the capacitor. And that is the high power tuning necessary to tune a half-wave 40-meter vertical. And I'm wanting to be able to run high power. I'm wanting to be able to run 1,000 to 1,500 watts through it. So that's why I think the best approach is going to be the coil and the capacitor there. But that makes it a single band, as we talked a minute ago. There it is again. There's another make of it right there. There's your coil and your capacitor. This guy actually has a tap there where he can move that tap and set it for 80 meters if he wanted to run the antenna on 80 meters. So back to experimenting. There's the cap. There's the coil. That coil actually is a homemade coil I made back in my novice days, in about 1964, a piece of plexiglass drilled and just wire just twisted through it. Look there, made my own coil there. So that's it. Coax comes in on the left side there, and the antenna hooks to the right side. Let's see what's next here. There it is inside the M&M's thing to waterproof it. We tried that. So another way to use inductors and capacitors is link coupling. You notice those others were not link coupling, but Another old school way to do it would be link coupling, and that was very popular back in the early days of ham radio. And there are formulas there are calculators on the internet where you can calculate capacitance, inductance, and put the frequency in, and it'll tell you exactly what you need. We needed 1.5 microhenry, and we needed, for 40 meters, we needed 50 picofarad. All right, so let's see. So here's a link coupled. This is a link coupled diagram, and you can see there's a parallel capacitor and coil, and then there's a link. There's a two-turn link that link couples it, and I'll show you what that looks like. So there it is. There's the 1.5, and I've got a capacitance or an inductance and an inductance meter. So this winding a little coil for 1.5 microhenries there, and a two-turn primary around it, and there's my capacitor. Now the capacitor will actually tune that from 10 meters up to 40 meters. So at maximum capacitance, you would get close to 40 meters, and at minimum capacitance, you would get you'd be able to run 10 meters with it. So again, you could set that to have a match on 40 meters. You could actually read the capacitance of that with a capacitance meter, and you would actually read the capacitance of 50 picofarad. And you could actually put a fixed in there if you were just going to run one band. All right, so that's a couple ways that we did it. Now, again, I want high power. So I'm going to have to go with, I think, an LC circuit, one of these two circuits. The other way that you can do this is with the 49-to-1 UN-UN, and basically that's what it looks like there. This is a true in-fed, fed with a 49-to-1 balance, UN-UN. Dave Kessler did a review on a half-wave antenna. If you guys have seen it, he could not make it work. Anytime he would lift a piece of coax up off the ground, a foot or 2 foot, or move something, the SWR would go just crazy on all different bands. So he basically gave it up. And that's some of the things that I found with this, but there is a little secret that most people don't tell you when you buy a half-wave antenna. Again, my half-wave antenna is vertical instead of horizontal. Many people run their half-wave antennas horizontal. The thing about using the UN-UN here in a half-wave, you can use it on multiple bands without retuning it. It will actually work all the harmonic bands like 80, 40, 20, and so forth. The other issue is that you can't run very easily. You can't run 1,000 watts with this toroid here. There are ways to try to get there, but after a few minutes, this toroid will actually heat up and the SWR goes crazy. So let's build a quick 49-to-1 match. So you take a piece of wire right there, and I tapped another piece on there for our input. You'll see what that is in a minute. Get you some toroids. Order them. You can order them off Amazon or wherever. Those are FT240s, and those are 43 mix. So we take one of those. I did wrap it in electrical tape. It's best if you can wrap it in something like some type of a high temperature coating. Fiberglass or something, but I wrapped it in tape here just so I wouldn't skin up the wire when I pulled it through. So let's build. Here's the first build. This is a single core 49-to-1, very basic. You can see the coax comes in on the right side. We've got 100 picofarad capacitor across the coax connector. We've got 14 turns of wire, and that wire sticking out connects to the antenna, so it's pretty simple. We put that in a simple box you can get anywhere, a Walmart or whatever. And, you know, there you can see we mounted the coax connector, a little ground connector, and the antenna connector. And we put it in a little box right there. to kind of waterproof it, and there it is, all put together and sealed and ready to go. That will handle about 100 watts if you operate kind of 50% duty cycle. That'll kind of handle close to 100 watts. It'll definitely handle QRP. I needed high power. The way you get to high power is use more cores. You either wrap a toroid with two toroids or three toroids for the core. So here I'm going to glue two toroids together, and then I'm going to wind the 49:1 winding on here.
We're going to need about 60 inches for the secondary, so I've already done that. So what we're going to do is we're going to twist these. It's kind of like a bifiller, I guess you call it. These are actually going to go to ground here. This is going to be the input from the coax connector, and from here to here, this is the primary, and this is going to be wound pretty tight all the way up. So let's see if we can wind this without messing it up too bad. I've not done this before, but we're going to try it. So I'm going to put it in my little vise right here. You can see it. I'm going to put it in my little vise right here, and let's see what happens. Stick it in here and see how it goes. Alright, so it's in there. Here's the input from your coax, input to the ballon. These will be twisted, and this will be grounded here. And then the rest of the wire here will be the secondary winding around the toroid. Now to twist this, a tight twist, we're going to use a drill. Let's see if I can figure this, get it. I haven't practiced this, so we don't know how it's going to go. Let's just see what happens. We're going to put the wire in the drill. And we're going to tighten it down. We're in there. Okay, here we go. We're going to try to do a twist now. Here we go. I think we're loose here. We'll try it again. Wire is slipping, so we're going to try to tighten it a little. Here we go. Don't want to get it too tight. That looks pretty consistent. That looks pretty consistent right there, the twist we've got. Again, this will be the ground end. We'll have two turns of this in our toroid. That's the input for the primary. And then the long piece here will be wrapped a total of 14 turns, and that will give us the two-turn primary, 14-turn secondary ratio that's supposed to match our infed impedance. So we're going to see how it goes. We're going to start trying to wind this in the toroid. We're going to wind the primary backwards two turns. And then we'll take the secondary here and we'll wind it the other direction until we get to 14 turns. So let's see how it's going to go. It's a little stiff wire, but we're going to see how it goes. The double wire is going to be a little bit hard to pull through here, but we're going to make it. I'm glad we just got two turns we have to do. All right. So actually, it turned out pretty good. So it actually turned out pretty good. Actually, let me, we'll put one little more little twist right here. There we go. So now you can see what we've got. We've got this is the ground in I was talking about. Here's the short one. It's a primary input, and we got two turns. Each time it goes through the hole, it's one turn. So we go through there, one, two, and now we've got the primary done. Now we're going to wrap the secondary. We need a total of 14 turns. We're going to do seven on this half, and then we're going to cross over. And then we're going to do seven more back on the other side. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, so let's see if we can start winding this thing. What we're going to do is we're going to wind the primary backwards. We're going to put it in the toroid like this. And then we're going to wind like this. Hey, if it goes bad, we'll just rewind it. We've got more wire here. I've got some 100 picofarad capacitors ordered. Anything over a 1,000 volt, 100 picofarad 1,000 volt capacitor will work. It's just a little blue capacitor. But I'm going to put, I ordered some 100 picofarad, I think I ordered 30,000 volt 100 picofarad capacitor, so I'll put one of those across here. So I'm going high on the capacitor voltage, I'm going high on the two cores, so we'll see what happens. So what was all number 12, I think? Let me count.
Okay, so that's basically how you wind the core or the toroid there. Went to Lowe's, got us just an electrical box right there. You can see just a simple electrical box. These are neat because they've got a gasket. There are no holes in it, and you can actually waterproof it here. So you can see the hardware I put in here. I put a wing nut in there for ground. I put a wing nut in here for the antenna and a coax connector. And I put a couple eye bolts in here. One eye bolt is to hang it if you want to. The other eye bolt is a stress relief, where you can actually hook the antenna wire through that eye bolt on the left here. So you take that, you do your hardware right there, you put your toroid in there that you just wound, you start connecting it up. There's some of the connectors, let's see. I just put the blue 100 picofarad in there after these pictures were made again. I bought some 30,000 volt capacitors to go in there. Close it up, that's what it looks like. And you know, the thing I found with the end fed, and particularly the vertical, was, and what Dave showed in his video, was that it went everywhere. SWR was high, low, here, there. You move your antenna analyzer 2 feet, a little bit more coax touch the ground. The SWR would be good here, but it'd be very bad here. It was just crazy. It was just going everywhere. So it's real difficult to get it to work at a very low SWR on all bands. Most people have to have a little compromise in there. You'll get the SWR down good on some bands, and maybe there's a couple bands that the SWR might be a little higher than you wanted. But again, it's usable. It's not that usable for me because I don't want high SWR running an amplifier there. Now, there's one thing that many people don't tell you when you buy these or build these, or you look at it on the internet, and they tell you that you don't need a ground. You don't need a ground, and you don't need a counterpoise, or maybe just a little 10-foot counterpoise, or use the coax. Well, here's the thing. If you don't use the counterpoise, the coax cable becomes the other part of the antenna. And, you know, if you've got, like I do, I've got underground 130 feet of cable going out, and then I had cable going from that point to this antenna. So I probably had 140 feet or so of coax. That all affects the tuning. So anybody trying this 49-to-1 Balun, at my house, their house, wherever, it's going to be totally different everywhere because everybody has different runs of coax. And they don't tell you in most books, and when you order these, they don't tell you. But there's a little secret to this that I found out, and it helps tremendously. And one of the guys on Facebook, one of my friends, Ron, showed me this, and I noticed it. High-end fed antennas kind of gives you the secret here, and I've circled the secret there. And if you look at that, I've got circled a 0.05 wavelength, 0.05 lambda, or it's actually 0.05 wavelength. And you can see every configuration he's got there, they've got that 0.05 wavelength piece of coax between the matching device, at the top picture, you got your matching device. You go through that 0.05 piece of cable, and then you come up to a common mode a Balun or choke right there, like an ugly choke or something. If you'll notice, every single one of those has the 0.05 lambda in there. Now, and that is about 2.1 meters long, about 6 feet, a little over 6 feet long for 40 meters. If that's not in there, this thing goes like berserk. It goes haywire. And so when I saw that, I just, you know, wound me up an ugly Balun there with some coax. I want an M&M's jug, actually. That was the second one. Boy, those M&M's were good. So I wound me a Balun right there. At 6 feet away from the toroid. And that brought all the SWR measurements very close. It wasn't going haywire anymore because things aren't changing. You have a fixed 0.05 length counterpoise there. So you can see if that was not in there, my counterpoise would have been 130 feet long. Or it could have been 100 feet long, or 60 feet, or whatever. But that Balun right there actually sets and fixes the distance, the 2.1 meters from there up to the tuning thing. So that's basically what we did to help to solve the problem there. Let's see what we got here. Let's see, that's me, and let's see. Oh, that's the chat room. So. That's kind of what I found out in my experimenting. I made probably hundreds of trips outside. You can't just screw an antenna analyzer on this thing and look at it because, again, you don't have the 0.05 in there. Everything affects it. Hiked above ground affects it. Everything affects it. Now, in addition or in place of the 0.05 wavelength piece of coax that's in there, there is the option of grounding that antenna. I've grounded it, and that seems to work better. So you can see right there, let's see. Well, the coax, of course, that doesn't show you very much right there. You can see I've got a ground lug right there that's grounded to the coax connector right there. The ground lug greatly helps it. So on an infed like that, you really do. Now, some people may get them an infed, buy it, put it up, and say it works wonderful. I think they're lucky people if they do that, especially if it works on all bands. It's almost a miracle. And probably a lot of people that put these up, I don't know why they do it. Well, I guess I do know why they do it, but they'll put a infed up, and then they'll order a tuner, and they'll put a tuner on it. And I'm thinking, okay, if you're going to order a tuner, why don't you just put you a half wavelength piece of wire out there and eliminate this right here? So, anyway, I wanted I wanted a resin antenna at 40 meters that I could use with the amplifier, because I don't have a second high power tuner. So that's kind of what I've been working on this week, and I hope maybe some of those things might help you there if you're having trouble with your NFED. I'm going to open the phone lines tonight, and we'll just talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. And let's see, phone lines coming up. Let me put the phone number on here. Phone number.
Hey, where? Tom.
Yes.
Wayne had a question about your M&M container.
Yeah.
He's wondering how long you think it's going to be okay out in the weather while that you don't have any issues with sunlight.
In the M&M container? Well, I don't know.
The plastic.
I don't know. It was just kind of an experiment on our part, you know, to see how it works. My antenna farm out there, I have a number of cables that go outside, and let me start this computer audio.
Yep.
I have a number of cables that go underground from the shack out there, and they come up into a grounding system out there and radio system and so forth. And then I have covers that go over that. You've seen these, like these big irrigation black things they put in these containers they put in the ground with the green top on them, you know.
Sure.
You can pop the green top off. Well, my stuff comes up under there. So things like, I've got a 1.5 kilowatt auto tuner out there. Everything is enclosed in that, so it doesn't get wet. It's not in the sun. So there are ways to protect it if you want to. All right, guys, 712-775-7270 if you want to call in. You'll have to do the code and the pound sign. Hey, I just want to mention that there are two real good NFED Facebook groups out there. Steve Ellington has a group called NFED Antennas. Join it. He's got a lot of information about building them and testing them and so forth. That's Steve Ellington, NFED Antennas. And also John Lanigan has a good NFED antenna site out. It's called Real Half-Wave NFED Antennas. And again, I was going for a vertical NFED. I checked in with John Lanigan's group, and they tell me a vertical or the horizontal is going to be the same impedance. I'll accept that. They're the experts on it. So check those groups out. John Lanigan, Real Half-Wave NFED Antennas, and Steve Ellington, NFED Antennas on Facebook. And we've got a caller, I think. Who's the caller?
You got Kilo Bravo 3, Zulu Victor Hotel, Richard, Erie, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
What's going on, man?
Well, I tried to get a hold of you earlier in the net, but evidently you moved up to 189 from 180, and the conditions weren't that great tonight. But
now, Richard, the band must have been really bad, because I didn't move. We stayed on 180 the whole time.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
I couldn't hear you very well.
I
heard you a couple times. You'd go up and down.
Yeah.
And, I just wanted to call and comment about that NFED. How long is the main part of your antenna?
Well, the antenna is an NFED half wave, so it's a half wave on the band that you want to use. So on 40 meters, 40 meters, a half wave is going to be about 65 feet, and that's straight up. That's straight up.
Straight up a tree. Are you going straight up a tree then, right?
Yeah, I am. I'm going straight up, and let me change a picture here. That'll work. I go straight up. I picked me out a limb. It was actually about 64 feet, and my wire was 65. So down at the bottom, I kind of curved it just a little bit, you know, to make it fit, because it's not real easy, you know, going over a 65-foot limb.
kidding. Jeez.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I've got some really tall trees, poplar trees in the back. I might want to try that with those poplar trees, putting up a vertical there. So I'll have to use some of that information from tonight. And while I still got both of you, I want to wish you both a very happy Thanksgiving and have a really nice holiday with your family.
Well,
and
thank you. Thank you so much, Richard. And go ahead and continue.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. And happy Thanksgiving to you and the family also. Nice to hear from you tonight.
You. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to comment about the antenna, so I'll let somebody else.
Hey, Richard, don't go. Richard, don't go yet. Let me tell you something. If you follow the show previously, and I think it's on our Facebook group, we have a 3/8 wavelength vertical. I would suggest to you to, a 3/8. Yeah, 3/8 is shorter than a half wave. 4/8 would be a half wave, right? So I would recommend that. Let me tell you, Martin told me to build this half wave, so I did it. Here's the problem. A quarter wave antenna, which is about 33 feet, it has a angle of radiation of about 28 degrees. So you're going off at 28 degrees and then you're bouncing back down at a certain distance. The 3/8 wavelength has a takeoff angle of about 23 degrees, which is much lower. That means it's going to go out further before it hits, it comes down. So you're going to have a little bit longer distance on it. The half wave that I'm playing with this week, the half wave has a takeoff angle of 20 degrees, and that's a killer. And let me tell you, it takes off 20 degrees, and any station in the United States, just about, is 2 to 3 to 4 S units weaker on that antenna. But if the station you're trying to talk to is more than 1,500 miles away, that half wave is about 2 to 4 S units stronger. And I would tune in hams like in Spain and do a comparison and so forth. And there's been a lot of fading and stuff up and down, so you have to make quick switches, from one end to the other and do it a number of times. But the takeoff angle is so low on a half wavelength that it's not a very good antenna for use in the U.S. So I'm contemplating whether I'm going to even keep it. I'd probably just take it down after all this. So I don't know. But think about that. The plans for building the 3/8 were real simple. Single core, just a bifiller winding. The antenna, I think, is 47 feet long instead of 66 feet long. You will need, with the 3/8, you will need a good ground system. I would recommend laying out some radios or something. If you don't have any buried, just lay some out. But it would probably even work even with a couple of ground rods. So I don't recommend a half wave. I'm going to have to tell Martin that was not a good idea. I wasted a lot of time the last 2 weeks with an antenna that's worse in the United States, because I don't work a lot of DX. But you can make your choice there of what you want to do, man. It's fun just building and experimenting with it. The NFED is a doozy to try to match, let me tell you. A doozy. Have you got a better word for that, Katie?
No, I like doozy.
Doozy? It's a doozy, man.
It's a doozy. Yeah.
It's a doozy. You know, hey, with the 3/8, it was a bippity boppity boo, and it all came together. With the with the half wave, it's a doozy, man. It's a doozy. That's all I can say.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to watch and see how things going with you, and maybe build one of those for DX, because I like to do DX also.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll help get some of those Oceania countries that I'd like to get. So have to keep on watching. So, yeah. have a really good holiday, and I'll let the next person get on.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much, Richard, in Pennsylvania. Thank
okay,
you. Thank you. All right. 712-775-7270. And there's that music again. As long as we don't have a caller, we get that music. And if you guys don't want to listen to the music, you better call in. Let's see if we're going to get another call. That may have been the only watcher we had tonight. You know?
Could be. Well, we've been in the chat room talking about all of the Black Friday specials going
on. Oh, have you?
Everybody's getting their shopping list together. And we just did a little video earlier today for work because at Ham Radio Outlet, we've got our pre-Black Friday specials that are already out. And then there's going to be more rolling in when Black Friday actually hits. So some good deals to be had out there. So we've been chatting about that on the chat room here.
Yeah, and I saw your video that you made about your Black Friday thing. That was cool.
It's been fun doing all kinds of new stuff. And it's been pretty cool and learning some new tricks. And it's actually been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying that. It's some new ways of doing my job. And it's always fun when you can do some new things and expand your horizons a bit.
All right, who we have on the phone?
G'day, Tom, Tony, VK310L.
Tony!
VK3, Tony. How you doing, Tony? Now, Tony, you're working right now, right?
I am in my lunch break.
Oh, lunch break. Okay.
Right. Great.
All right.
Nice
well,
to hear you, course. Tony.
How you doing down here, man? It's about to get summertime down here.
We've got 4 days until it hits summer. So it's about 73 degrees at the moment and sunny, which is very nice. Huh.
Well,
oh, that sounds wonderful.
It's not that warm here and raining, and winter is going to be coming here. But, you know, hey, that's part of Thanksgiving. Now, Tony, you guys don't have Thanksgiving down here, right?
No, we don't. No Thanksgiving for us. But my wife and my daughter are at Disneyland at the moment, so they'll be celebrating Thanksgiving on Thursday.
Okay.
Well, fun.
Lucky them.
Well, that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, sure. How come you're not at Disneyland with them?
Well, it's a girls' trip. School's a bit different here, so they graduated school now at the end of the year, and. Mm-hmm. She is part of what we call schoolies, so she's decided to go to the USA for her schoolies.
Oh, very nice. That sounds great. Well, I hope they have a wonderful time while they're here.
And we
sounds
we
like
all
a
know,
good place to celebrate, too.
We all know when you work, you don't get that time off like that, so that's kind of cool.
Right.
No. Well, my wife, she's a police officer, so she gets 9 weeks holiday every year. Lucky her.
Oh. Did you say you're a police officer?
I was a police officer for 20 years, but I'm not a police officer anymore, but my wife is.
Okay, all right, I got you, man. Well, that must have been an exciting time now. Do you get any U.S. TV shows? Or we watch a live PD every week. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, we get all the U.S. TV shows. It's all U.S. TV shows. So mainly it's all Netflix and Disney Plus and everything.
Oh, that's cool there. Well, Tony, I want you to build a half-wave antenna and see if you can make the thing work.
I'll do that. I'll get right onto that. We've just had our spring VHF, UHF field days on the weekend. So all the amateurs were out in the mountaintops trying to make contacts around Australia and into New Zealand.
All right, man.
That'll be great. Well, good luck with that. It sounds like it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, excellent. Well, great show again tonight. Thanks very much.
Okay, Tony. Well, thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, Tony. Always nice to hear from you.
Well, at least we have two viewers. We have two calls. Thank you, Tony. Right. Well, we're going to give Tony extra points because he's so far away.
I know, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tony.
All right. Cheers, Alpha Bravo 5, Julia Mike.
Okay, now wait a minute. A little muffled
Alpha
here.
Alpha Bravo 5, Julia Mike.
Julia Mike. Now, he checked in. What was that, AB5?
Yep.
Yeah, now, Jim, I think it's Jim. He checked the internet tonight. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing very good, and I'm enjoying your show.
Well, cool, man. I mean, hey, not a whole lot's going on in the show tonight. Some nights we have very exciting shows and just have a lot of fun. Tonight's been kind of so-so, but we're still having fun
really
there.
Good.
And I thought tonight it would just be good to have people call in, and let's just talk whatever you want to about ham radio. This is probably the first time that you've joined us, right?
Exactly, and I've certainly enjoyed our QSO on HF, and looking forward to doing it again.
All right, now, Tony, Jim, you're the one that talked to me about the Air Force, right?
Exactly. Yes, I did.
Boy, let me tell you, Jim went in January of 69. I went in January of 69. Jim got out the end of 72. I got out in the end of 72. We both made the same ranks. We both, there were so many things that were common, but we both went in with a delayed enlistment. We both were trying to keep the Army off our heels, so we joined. Jim's whole story sounded just like mine, didn't it, Jim?
Exactly.
Yeah. Except for one thing, he got to go to all the good places. He went to Vietnam his last year. I went to Korea. I think that was the only difference.
Well, you were the lucky one.
Yeah. Well, did they pay you in real money when you were in Korea? And when you were in Vietnam?
No, they gave us this MPC. Military payment certificate.
Okay.
It was the only time you could dig into your wallet and give somebody a nickel, and it was in paper money.
You know what? Now we have something else in common. We were paid the same way. They wouldn't give us money. We got the same thing. I'm trying to find something different here, man. Well, look, man, it was tough in Vietnam, and I appreciate your service and thank you and all that. It wasn't near that bad in Korea. There were little skirmishes every now and then, but nothing near me. But, you know, the thing about the Koreans, man, let me tell you, you could be going down the road and with driving a deuce and a half, and Jim, you know what a deuce and a half is, right?
Oh, I've driven one several times.
You could be going down the road in a deuce and a half, and these Koreans could come up beside you, two of them on a motorcycle, and they could actually unbolt and steal one of the back wheels while you were driving. Now, could they do that in Vietnam?
Oh, they could. They could even take your wristwatch off while you were riding around.
That's true, and I know also. Back about that time, you didn't even wear a ring in the Philippines or stick your arm out the window because you would end up with one finger less.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. Wow. Hey, Jim, we join us every Tuesday night on that net, and I'm on a lot of nights. I'm on 7180 a lot of evenings around 6 o'clock or so. Be sure and jump in here. Boy, I'd like to talk to you about old times.
I'll be happy to do that. And 7-3.
All right, Jim, thanks. And, hey, Jim, where are you located? I don't have it in front of me.
Alexandria, Louisiana.
Yeah, down in Louisiana. Well, very good, Jim. Thank you for calling in, man. I hope you come back.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care.
All right, 73.
7-3.
All right.
KG0BK.
Okay, KG0BK. I wonder who that could be.
You know
Russ. Sound like Russ. Is that Russ?
It is. Yep.
How you doing, Russ?
Hi, Russ.
I guess I can disguise it now. I was going to say no, but yeah.
Yeah, man.
Hey, can you say say hi to Dwayne for me? Thank him for his. It's been quite a few shows ago, but we had some problems with keeping an antenna connectors tight, and I followed his advice. It worked great. So thank him for me. even though I don't know how to spell his name.
That's okay. He heard you and he just waved from back there. He's, you're welcome.
All righty. Tom, good show. And interesting, I'm going through, we just moved about 2 months ago to a downtown apartment. Wonderful for hams. Great savings on money, but wonderful for hams. So I've been playing with antennas for 2 months now, trying to get something working. And that little trick of the 0.05 lambda thing is what I found out does work the best.
You know, a lot of people...
I was having some trouble. Some of my antenna were was inside, some of it was outside.
Yeah.
So talking about RF City, that cured a lot of it.
And, you know, a lot of people sell that half wave, in-fed half wave, and they don't tell you that. It's just like throw it up and hook it up and good luck, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you get a chance. It wasn't quite half wave. In fact, I built it on a 9-to-1 Bowen. I'm not half wave, so at 9-to-1 Bowen. And then tried the that 0.5 lambda, and wow, things really got better. And then tried a, the same as Martin's artificial ground, although kind of built one myself out of an old tuner I had, and got rid of all the RF in the shack, even though part of the antenna is in the shack. So how well it gets out, I don't know. It depends on conditions. I can go east coast most all the time, sometimes south, sometimes west. Depends on conditions.
Well, keep playing with the antennas. See if you can get you a halfway vertical up. I want to know if anybody can make it work better than... I'm not happy with it. I'm going to tell Martin I'm not happy with it. Martin, you know, Martin convinced me to do it, and it's taken 2 weeks of my life, man.
Okay.
What else you got
have,
going on?
I did have a contact in Texas. I got to tell you quickly about... I wish I had written his call down here, but I don't have it. Anyway, he had just bought a house that nobody wanted. It wasn't a house. It was an old radio station. And he bought it to turn it into a house. And the reason nobody wanted it is because it had this 200-foot tower in the back of it. He said, oh, figure out something to do with it. I felt so sorry for him.
Well, he could put Christmas lights on it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel for him, but I can't. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Tom, thanks. Great show tonight.
All
thank
right.
you.
All right, man. Hey, thanks, Russ, for calling. Hey, ND6M asked, is a half wavelength at one frequency? Of course, a half wavelength is a half wave on the highest, with the 49-to-1, the standby caller, with the 49-to-1, you use the halfway...
WHHW.
Yeah, stand by just 1 sec. Use the highest band you want to use. For instance, if you cut it for a 40-meter half wavelength, that's 66 feet, it's supposed to work on 40, 20, somewhat 15, 10 meters. So it's multi-band. SWR is not the same on every band, and it's a juggling deal, because if you really look at it, you know, they're harmonics of each, but you know, 7.05 megahertz, if you triple that, you get, you know, 21 something, or and if you double it for 20, 7.01, you'd get 14 point something being a band. But if you want that 40 meters to be up in a voice band, and you cut it for, you know, 7250, now on 20 meters, it's out of the band. It's out of the top of the band, so that makes your SWR higher. So it's a real juggling deal to try to find a point where you're happy with the SWR you have on each of the bands there. But and another thing, again, the... I don't recommend it. They're trying, they're experimenting with... and building the 49-to-1s with like two core. You saw I did a two core and a three core, three toroids glued together to handle the power. Those toroids will get hot, and when they get hot, they reach a certain temperature The SWR just goes just crazy off the scale. So that's one of the things. Power's an issue with it. So that's one of the reasons why I'm going to probably go with, if I keep it, I'm going to go with just the inductor, capacitor, L network, set it for 40 meters and not try to make it multi-band. Who's the caller? Who we have on the phone?
W8HW. Bruce.
Bruce, hi, W8HW. Bruce. Hey, Bruce, where are you?
Very well. I heard your net tonight. I listened in and okay. Didn't jump in because I was busy making some contacts. And by the way, Katie, I think you have a strong acquaintance, if I may, that I work tonight. Your what is it, WY7FD, if I'm not mistaken?
Yep, that's my husband. He's over there. Hey. Were you guys on MSK?
Oh. Well, hey, we were on
FT8.
Yeah, FT8.
So that's got to be a first. That's got to be a first. Somebody watching the show tonight worked Katie's home there. Bruce, did you know that you worked? Dwayne?
No, he's on there almost all the time while I'm on the show. So,
yeah. Did you know though, Bruce? Did you know that was Katie's spouse and on the show tonight? And did you tie it together?
I did. As a matter of fact, that was part of the reason I wanted to call, is to thank Katie. A few months back, she helped me connect with her husband. I needed his station on 160 meters. I've been a DXer for the last 20 years, and I hadn't done anything stateside. And I looked one day, and gosh, I really don't have much in WAS. And so I've got about 300 countries on just about every band. I've got 9-band DXCC. So I thought maybe I better start doing some stateside stuff. And I looked, and I didn't have 160 meters, or I didn't have Wyoming for 160 meters. Mm-hmm. And Katie helped me out there. She connected me with Dwayne. So and I just happened to run across him tonight, so that I thought I'd throw that at you.
Well, that's pretty great. Good. That's great, man.
Oh, yeah, you're very welcome. It's fun.
It's great how all this came around in one big circle there. We're one happy ham family, aren't we?
That's right. Absolutely.
Hey, I'm going to ask another favor, Katie. I'm going to ask you to tease your husband into contacting me on 10 meters. Would you believe 10 meters is the only band I don't have a worked all states? And guess which single state I need on 10 meters?
Oh, hey, boy. Next month is a 10-meter contest. Maybe the band will open and you can catch us.
Actually,
I like to run the 10-meter contest. I think I've got a couple certificates for it.
Okay. Well, now you talked me into it. Tom, I want to thank you for the information that you put out tonight. Very interesting what you did with the toroid coils. I've had experience with toroid coils and overdriving them and heating them up and killing the permeability. And then before, if there was a mistake to be made, I made it. And so I really enjoyed what you did there tonight.
Well, I went at it in three different ways to match that antenna. I'm not convinced I'm even going to keep that antenna, to tell you the truth. I mean, if you have to be 1,500 miles away, it's not much good for me.
Mm-hmm. There was one thing that I believe I heard you wrong on.
What's that?
You said that the half wave had a lower angle of radiation than the 3/8. I thought it was the other way around. I thought there was a couple of degrees less or lower on the 3/8 wave. Did I hear you wrong or what?
Well, I think, look it up, I could be, but I think I'm correct. I think a quarter wave is about
3/8 wave
is about 28
half.
Degrees. The 3/8 is a lower angle. I think it's about 25 degrees or 26 degrees or something. And then the half wave is, my reading on it was, and I haven't modeled it, but it was at 20. Mm-hmm. So I think it's lower, but hey, check it out and report back on the show next week. Let me check them out to help us.
Well, I will. And I was thinking the 3/8 wave was a little bit lower, but you know, sometimes we don't always remember. I'm not going to hold your show up. I'll let other callers call in, but I wanted to pass that on to you, and a double thanks. And tell Katie, tell your husband to look for me on 10 meters. W8HW, right. Hot water.
All right, will do. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless. 73s, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right. And Bruce, we expect to see you back on here next week.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. We'll have some kind of a story to tell you, some kind of a lie or truth. You'll have to figure out which.
You know, you're going to have to put a post-it note right now while you're thinking about it on your computer. tell me where you are, Bruce.
Presently, I'm in Port St. Lucie, Florida, originally from Michigan, the Great Lakes State.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put you a little note there, 9 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesday night. Well, if you're not here, we're going to be upset.
73.
All right, 73. We'll see you later. Good night.
All right, bye.
All right, guys, we really actually went a little over our show time.
Yep. Perfect timing. You know, Tom, I wanted to tell you, I really enjoyed your video because you showed all, it wasn't just like, you know, from the beginning to the end and here it was all of the stuff that you had to go through and your trials and what you tried and didn't work. And I mean, to me, that's reality and seeing all the different things you go through, and that's how you learn, and that's the fun of it. And so I just want to
thank you. I had a few other videos, but I kind of cut them short. I knew it was going to go long.
I liked it. I thought it was really helpful to see.
Well, we've had several people that have thanked us for showing, you know, step-by-step things, and it helps them here. Well, Katie, thanks for being on here with us again tonight. I guess we'll see you next week. Boy, next week, we'll already have Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so we'll have to report in on how much we overate.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Well, good night to everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in tonight. Join our Facebook group. It's called W5KUB. 8,000 hams in here. Help us grow it. If you're listening on International Shortwave, give us an email to tom@W5KUB. And we'll see you guys next week. 73 to everybody. Let's see. We'll just end it with... We'll end it with that. How's that? The old Indian test pattern.
Yeah.
Of course, that kind of dates me, so we'll go with that.
I think it's great.